It is Tuesday, May 14th, and I've been working on sounds over the last week, sound effects in the game. It was missing quite a few sound effects for different spells. Still is missing some, actually. And so I've gone through the process of adding different sounds. I'm trying to figure out a good system for playing sounds because right now I have an autoload that has some different, I can't remember the name of the node, but whatever node plays sounds. Can't believe I can't remember it right now. It's got a bunch of those, and then it picks one that's not playing a sound and plays it. So there's kind of a pool that it selects from to play the sounds, and I can only play so many sounds at a time. This system has worked pretty well and allows me to play sounds without having them interrupted or having to... I don't have to wait until, like, say, an enemy has a death sound, right? And I kill the enemy, play the sound, and destroy the enemy. I don't have to worry about, like, the sound cutting off because the enemy is no longer there. I can just play the sound on this auto-loaded singleton, and then it's going to be able to finish playing. The issue that I'm running into is just being able to master the sounds to make sure the audio levels on them are all working correctly. I've had some players say that the sounds are loud right now. And that's an easy fix. I can very easily give them a setting in the settings menu to adjust the volume of the sounds. But I'm concerned that what they're actually telling me is that the mastering of the sounds is not very good, and that some sounds are really loud and other sounds aren't quite as loud, and I need to figure that out. So I don't know for sure if that's the problem. I'm just suspicious, and the only way to know would be, well, first I need to get some more playtesting, some video recordings of players playing the game, and then I think I'd like to reach out to a developer who is good at sound effects, maybe Jonas Tyroler, or I think he does the sound effects for his games, and he's quite good at it. I'm not 100% sure, but I could reach out to him and check, maybe get some feedback from him and learn. I do feel like I have somewhat of a natural skill with doing sound effects. I feel like it comes relatively easily for me compared with other people. I did the sound effects for Tic Tac Tanks, and I had a lot of people say they like them. I've already had players say that they like the sound effects for Wazzard, that they appreciate the sound effects that are used. That doesn't mean there's not problems with the sounds right now. It's just that I feel like I have a little bit of a head start, and it's something that I enjoy doing, so I want to do the sound effects for my games in the future, but I've still got stuff to learn here, and I think reaching out to somebody who's more experienced, somewhat of an expert. If you're listening to this and you are good at mastering sound effects, you have experience with that, please reach out. I will gladly pay you to do a consultation call and get some feedback from you. But yeah, I was telling my wife the other day, when it comes to sound effects, I feel like I'm like an artist who has a really good understanding of maybe lighting, shapes, and perspective, but then really struggles with color. So then I can't quite, if I do a picture in black and white, it looks amazing, but you know, if I try to do something in color, I have a hard time making the colors look good together. You know, that's just kind of an analogy of what it feels like to me when I'm trying to do sound effects. Some sounds I end up really proud of them, really happy with them. Other sounds I'm like, okay, yeah, this needs to be redone. The hurt sound effect, I've iterated on it. Last week I iterated on it and it's significantly better, but it's still just not quite there yet. I've got to figure that out. That was the focus last week. I also last week made a, I did a kind of a dinner with my wife, and we talked about what I want to get finished. I decided to give myself one more week. So at first it was 4 weeks. I have bumped it up to 5. And the reason I want to give myself one more week is because I want to have time to make a small Steam page trailer. And I want to do a devlog on my YouTube channel. I really want to see how the wishlist numbers look after doing those two things and uploading the demo. If I was only worried about doing the demo, then I'd probably be able to upload the demo by the end of this week. And that would have been the 4 weeks. This is the last week of the 4 weeks, and I'm giving myself one more. So for the end of this week, I'd like to have a 30-second Steam trailer. I'd like to have more of the game animated. I already started on that this morning. I animated all of the slimes, which wasn't very hard, but I did that. I also have started trying to refactor some parts of the code. I've gone through a little bit of a crisis over the last 6 months when it comes to how I structure code and kind of my own programming style inside of Godot. And I've talked about this in previous podcast episodes a little bit, but because my style has changed in the last 6 months, I feel like there are things, my code base has some things that are kind of in the older style and some things that are in the newer style. And I'm trying to find a balance between cleaning up the code and making it something that I feel comfortable working in, cleaning up the code base, while still not getting so, worried about it that I'm rewriting the entire code base in order to fit some new style that I like, right? So the main thing that I've wanted to rework, and I feel like I have some justification for this, has been the enemy state system. The state system in itself is actually quite good. The problem is there are a few places in the enemy states where I'm rewriting, where I have duplicate code. So I'm pulling that code out, but I don't want to pull it out into, I don't want to use inheritance to bring that out. So I've kind of made a script that allows me to, that leans a little bit more into functional programming, where I can have like a function. Say I have a script called character mover, and it has a static function that takes a character as an argument, and then it can move that character. So I can easily, just inside of the enemy state script, I can call character mover dot move and then pass in the enemy and move it and kind of pull out some of that code that I was reusing in the states or had duplicate in the states. Okay, that was a little bit of a tangent, but I've been refactoring some of the code, and then I also I removed all the old artwork. I did that this morning. And I'm using GitHub and backing up this work, because I was like, it's kind of hard to remember what stuff is still being used and what stuff isn't. Luckily, Godot is a little bit smart about its dependencies, where if you try to delete something and it's still being used somewhere, it will usually tell you. There are exceptions to that. If you have a script that you're using somewhere, but it's not in a, it's not part of a scene, then it won't tell you. I think if you load something instead of preloading it, it won't tell you. In fact, it might not tell you if you preload it. I don't know. But say you have an image that is part of a scene and you try to delete that image, it will tell you that it's part of that scene. So using that, I was able to go through and delete a lot of the old stuff, which cleaned up the, again, just the project in general has gotten a little bit bloated because of redoing the art style. A lot of the rooms and levels and stuff, I didn't just swap out the artwork. I actually remade whole new levels and had the old levels. And the reason I did that was because the way that I'm doing the levels has changed significantly for the new art style. But then I did reuse some of the old code. Like, yeah, it was... So there was like duplicate code in places where, like, if you looked at a level from the old dungeon and a level from the new dungeon, they would both have a script that was almost the same but not the same. And so I cleaned that up, and it feels so much better to navigate the project. If I need to refactor anything, I'm not like, oh, is this a script that, you know, if you have two scripts that are almost identical, but one of them you're using and the other one you're not using anymore, and then you want to refactor something, you have to refactor them both. And I was running into that, and I was realizing I needed to clean stuff up. And it didn't take too long. It was actually faster to clean it up than to refactor anything that I'd been doing. So, So I want to animate more of the game this week, and then I want to get the Steam trailer up this week. I'm going to get it up before I do the demo. And so I want to do, I think I said this, a 30-second Steam trailer. I want to keep it really short. I don't know how I'm going to approach the Steam trailer yet. Obviously, the game that I have is still just a demo, so there's not a lot of content. It has to be more of like a teaser trailer still. But if I can come up with a simple little teaser trailer. The hard thing is that the main hook of the game is the accessibility of it. It's, I guess, the thing that makes it fun is that it's really accessible and almost relaxing to play while still having interesting mechanics around positioning your wizard. And I'm not sure how to, I mean, that's not really a strong, like a compelling visual hook. It's a lot easier to sell a game that has a compelling visual hook. So maybe I'll just kind of show off the animations, show off kind of, yeah, I'll have to think about that. The animations, I think, as I get those in and get the enemies in, I think the game, the rooms, the different biomes, all look pretty cool. I think that will help sell it. So I can kind of maybe focus on that right now and then focus on the simplicity of the game in some way. Anyway, I'm going to figure out what kind of a trailer I want to do and get that finished. 30 seconds shouldn't be too bad because it'll be so short. And then next week, the main goal is going to be actually uploading the demo. And well, this week I'm still going to be doing some sound stuff. Even though I got a lot of that done next week, I'm still noticing little places where I need to do it. So my goal is to try and kind of, I guess, break the threshold for professionalism with the demo. So try to make the demo feel very professional. And I think sound effects are a really important way of doing that. Although I am skipping music still because I don't know how I'm going to approach that yet. I'm probably going to have to hire somebody, but yeah. So next week, it's the devlog. Make a devlog about the new art. And I can maybe briefly talk about the new stat system as well. But I think the focus will be the new art. Make sure the demo is uploaded to Steam and that it works on PC and ideally on Steam Deck and Linux. Well, it'll work on Linux, but ideally I want to get it working on Steam Deck as well, because I think the game is very good on Steam Deck. I updated the character movement a little bit. This is a tiny tangent, but I got some feedback about the character feeling a bit slippery. I think when I changed the art style, it created a different expectation for how the character would move. And so I've changed the character's movement a little bit again. And I'd done some prototyping on that before, so I kind of already had an intuition that it needed to be a bit better, and I think it was improved. I'm going to update the Steam page next week with some different animated GIFs. Might even be able to do that this week, actually, and then upload the devlog. And then each week, I want to add a new spell and maybe polish some enemies. Add a new new charm if I can, but that's bonus. That's stuff that doesn't have to be done. Last week I added a new charm. Didn't get a new spell, but those are all bonuses. Like if I have extra time, I'll do that. I don't remember if I talked about it on this podcast, but I did redo the telegraph for the fire slime, and it's really good now. It definitely makes things way more, it feels a lot more fair if you get hit by the slime's fireball when it's bursting. So really happy with that. Still have to rework the salamander enemy. They still don't quite fit with the design of the game. And so I need to figure out how to make them more interesting as an enemy. But I am happy with the fire slimes now. Basically, the fire area just needs more enemies in general too. So that would be another great bonus, is if I could add more enemies. But it's unlikely I'll be able to get all of this stuff done. We're 16 minutes into this podcast episode. But I think you got an idea for my plan, kind of my thoughts. Again, I'm still having fun. I'm having a lot of fun working on this. I'm really far into the project. There's so much that I would do differently. But there's also stuff that, like, I don't feel like I could have done differently. Like the art style, I really just had to find my style when it came to the artwork. I think the biggest thing I would try to do differently is, and I've talked about this before, but it really has just, it's really hit home for me. The more, like the farther I get into the project and the more I learn about game development in general, I wish that I would have given myself a week per prototype rather than a month, right? This prototype, I made it in a month. The other prototypes I made them in a month. I spent 3 or 4 months doing different prototypes. And it just, there's a natural scope that comes with the length of time you give yourself to work on a prototype. It just naturally scopes the project for you. And I know this isn't my first game, and I'm in the position to be able to, I'm very fortunate to be in a position where I can work on this project, and if it flops, I'm still going to be okay, right? And I don't think it's going to flop, but if it did, I'm still going to be okay. If I end up not making very much money off of it versus the time that I put into it, I'm still going to be okay. But I want to avoid that, right? I want to feel like the time and effort that I put into it is going to pay off financially and justify the work that I put into it, you know? And I think if I had started, I think as you're making games, you start to develop workflows and systems and styles, and kind of you find yourself as a developer. And as you do that, you get faster and faster at making games. And you're able to make larger and larger projects in shorter and shorter amounts of time. Reusing code, reusing art styles, reusing whatever. Reusing your own workflows, kind of just figuring out your groove. And I think that's why everyone says to make small games for your first game. You know, my first commercial game was Antal, and I made it in Godot, and I feel like the main thing I was learning with that project was how to even just program in Godot. It was my first full project in Godot, and that helped me a lot on my Tic-Tac-Tanks and on Wazard now. It's helped me a ton that I'm already comfortable programming in Godot. I don't spend a lot of time looking up tutorials on how to do stuff in Godot, right? Because I've had experience doing that now. But there's still areas where I'm like, well, how am I going to what type of art style am I going to be using for this project? And how am I going to do my settings menu? Which there was a settings menu in Endhall, but and see, that helps. That's going to help me for this. But I'd really like to have like a code base where I can just actually just use the code. You know, I can kind of reference my code in Endhall, but I can't just use it. And if I were making games more frequently, then I'd just be able to use it. I want to reuse this art style. Like, I want to have kind of my art style. There's Demon Lock and there's Wazard. They have similar art styles. I want to kind of find my own style. I want to find my own programming style, even though I know how to program in Godot. If you can find a style that you're comfortable working in, then it just removes a lot of the questions. You just kind of go to the thing that you already do, you know? And kind of creates these, I guess, grooves that you can move through more easily as you're working on your game. And I think you can find those grooves more quickly and iterate on them more quickly, those workflows, if you're doing smaller projects. And but see, you know, I think I overcorrected a bit, because when I released Endhall, everybody was like, this is too small. It's a demo. Why are you charging for this? Right? Well, not everybody, but that was the kind of the bigger chunk of negative feedback on the game on Steam, if you go look at it. And so then I was like, well, I can't make small games. Players don't like small games, right? If I make a small game, people tell me it's a demo and that I shouldn't be charging for it. Because Endhall was a small game, and I tried to market it as a small game. I wasn't trying to trick people, you know what I mean? So then I was like shocked when the reviews came back and they're like, this is a small game. And I'm like, yeah, I know. The subtitle on the game is a bite-sized roguelike. That's how I felt when I was kind of shocked, honestly. And I don't blame them, because the problem isn't that the game was small. The problem is that the game was a demo. They're right. I made a really good demo and then didn't actually take that demo through production, right? In order to make content that would go with that demo. So I kind of overcorrected and I was like, oh, well, I have to make a big game. I actually did a better job of this with Tic Tac Tanks, which is I made a very small prototype that was fun, and then I made 50 levels for it and only charged a very small amount. So Tic Tac Tanks, I did a much better job of what you should do. And with Wazard, it's just pre-production has just taken me longer because my prototype took longer to make, right? Like, the prototype took longer, getting to the demo took longer, and now I still have production ahead of me, right? I'm just finishing I was basically finished with pre-production, and then I decided to rework the art style. And so I don't know if I count that as production or pre-production. You could count it as production. You could say that I've been in production since January. And I think that's fair. So, but I've still got a lot of production ahead of me, and I can just imagine if I'd made a small prototype in a week and then had a solid demo finished in a month, then I'd be looking ahead and being like, okay, if I have 6 months of production, then I'm going to have a really solid, very polished game by the end of 7 or 8 months that I can put up on Steam, and even part-time work, right? Whereas Wazard is going to be a year and a half. I've been working on it about a year now, I think. Well, no. I don't remember when I actually started prototyping Wazard. It was my last prototype. It might have been like July, I think June or July, where I actually started prototyping Wazard. But it's almost been a year of part-time work. It's going to end up being probably a year and a half, maybe a little more of part-time work. And, you know, I'm just kind of wishing that I had done something that would have been like half a year of part-time work. But it'll be fine. It's not a big deal. It's just, you know, that's what I do differently if I could go back. and probably will do differently. In my next project, I'm going to try and take a shorter amount of time on the prototype and demo to see if I can come up with a really nice product sooner. I've been watching, this is kind of the last note here that's relevant, that's related to what I just said, which is I've watched, there's a free training by a company called Pro Indie Dev, and they have a paid course, which is like, I don't remember how much it was, few hundred dollars. And so pretty expensive. And their content, as far as I can tell, the guy that does it, his name's Gabe. He's from Brazil. And he's definitely a salesman. But like provides a lot of good value in the content that he provides. And, you know, I'm giving the disclaimer that he's a salesman because he has kind of like that vibe to him when he's pitching stuff, but he does a really good job. It doesn't feel pushy. I like him. I like the free content, but one of the things he says is he uses this analogy of in their free training. So I want to put that out there that I don't have the paid course. I'm not, I guess stealing their paid content and sharing it for free in other places. That's not what I want to do. But in their free training, he has this concept that he calls the, the high jump. You know those high jumpers, they have that bar and they have to try and jump over the bar. Making a game is like that. It's an analogy he uses. And he's like, players perceive a game as being professional or high quality if you can exceed their expectations or basically clear that bar. And the higher above that bar you actually make it, the more professional they perceive that game. Now you don't get to choose what bar you have. Players have certain expectations for different genres, okay? And different games. And that is the height of the bar, is the player's expectations. So if you go to make a Metroidvania, players are going to have a certain amount of expectations that you have to, you know, that are going to be that bar. And if you look at games like Hollow Knight, they very much clear that bar. Players had a certain amount of expectations. Now that bar has been cleared. But here's the thing, because Hollow Knight came out and cleared that bar so high, it actually raised the bar of players a little bit, right? Because now your game is being compared to Hollow Knight. And so if I could give you any advice, it would be to pick a low bar. Pick a genre, pick a game that has a pretty low bar that makes it easier for you to clear that bar and exceed your players' expectations, especially with your first games. It's going to make selling your game a lot easier for you. And I feel like I picked a genre with Endhall that had a slightly higher bar, and I just didn't clear the bar, and it didn't feel very professional. And now the bar that I have set for me with Wazard is Binding of Isaac. Even though the game is not like the Binding of Isaac, it's different in a lot of ways. There are similarities. It's going to be compared to it. That's a bar that comes with the genre that I have chosen and the kind of expectation that players have for it. So try to pick, the best advice I could give you is to try to pick a game or genre that you want to pick one you enjoy, but then pick one where you can clear the bar. And I'm almost out of time. We're 29 minutes in. I can only record for 30 minutes max. So thank you so much for listening, and I will see you all in the next podcast.